Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk
good evening. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. Happy Shabbat to one and all. I'm here with Kirk and Dee. And ladies and gentlemen, this was a pretty hellacious week. I have always wondered why Yahweh stopped prophecy over, it was exactly 1,000 years. Abraham is called a prophet, and it's only because his dialogue with Yahweh regarding the covenant literally permeated all of history from that point going forward. But his words are only retained through the prophet Moshe, the great liberator. And from 1447 BCE to 447 BCE, exactly 1,000 years was the full reign of Yahweh's inspired prophets. There have been no more. And, you know, I've pondered over the years why God stopped there and why there were not others. And, you know, one thing, of course, strikes me is that it wasn't long after that time that that Israel broke into warring factions between the political and religious interests in Israel, and fought the Maccabean Wars and against the Greek occupation. And there were no winners in that. There were only losers. And it's likely that anybody that was actually able to read Hebrew and would have had access to the Torah, it is, I would say, the chances are 1 in a billion that any one of those individuals would have been receptive to Yahweh. So, you know, he doesn't force himself through people. He doesn't use them as robots. There would have been no available prophet. And if you look at Dode arriving to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuot in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, and there is not a single record in a Jewish hand acknowledging that Dode arrived to do these things. Not one. The only eyewitness accounts are what Dode wrote, coupled with what Yashayah prophesied. So you've got prophecies in Yashayah and, you know, quite a few other of the prophets. There's prophecies in Malachi and Zechariah and others pertaining to what he did. But most of the prophecies, eyewitness accounts, are in Dode's own hand. And that's certainly fine. We don't miss anything more. But not having anyone chronicle it tells you that there wasn't a single Yehudim whom Yahweh could reveal prophecy through. You know, the level of commitment and responsibility of being Yahweh's prophet is really extraordinary. And there wasn't anybody beyond ordinary. So it's easy to see why there weren't any. And then, you know, during the time of the Romans, there were warring factions among Jews and Jews fighting the most beastly regime on earth. And they were then sent off into diaspora. Clearly, there's no attachment to the land. God has given up on his people for a very long time and has returned to Shamaim and is going to let history play out, which is what has transpired. All the while, he had this plan that beginning on Teruah, 32 years before his return, he would reach out and reconnect with his people, although not with a prophet. Now, the reason I say this, and speaking of the history of the prophets and God speaking, is that, well, I started off rough. You know, my first translations of Hosea were crude. I made many, many mistakes in terms of speaking of a renewed covenant when the covenant won't be renewed for another 10 years. Trying to incorporate some New Testament statements into the presentation when the New Testament's a piece of trash. And did not recognize until a couple of years ago that Dodes not only was the Messiah, he is the Messiah. He is not only was the Son of God, he is the Son of God. He is our Savior. And so, you know, some things have come slow, and clearly I'm rewriting Prophet of Doom as Goddamn Religion. I'm about to finish, and I will within the week, Volume 3 of Goddamn Religion. But the reason, one of the reasons I'm writing it, if not the primary reason I'm writing it, is that I made a lot of mistakes in the first version. And, you know, there were minor mistakes as it relates to Islam. The biggest mistakes were related to Twistianity. This notion that there was a Yeshua and that Yahweh somehow used him to fulfill Pesach Matzah Bekudim. I didn't know anything. And so it's vital, if you affect that, we rewrite it. That's the reason why if you look at the Yada Yah homepage, there is no link to Prophet of Doom anymore. And as soon as I finish Volume 3, I'm going to ask our good friend Joe to remove Prophet of Doom, not the URL, not prophetofdoom.net, but the book Prophet of Doom, and replace it with Goddamn Religion on the site, so that Prophet of Doom is no more. It was a decent tool, I guess, as an introduction. But after those mistakes and sharing the mistakes I made, and I'm certainly entitled. I don't know if entitled is the right word, but it isn't a knock on a witness to make a mistake. If I were a prophet, it would be deadly, but I'm not. I'm a witness. I'm a herald. I'm a choder. It's a very different level of responsibility. And what I think I have communicated, in fact, I know I have communicated more to benefit the children of Yisrael than any one prophet over the course of the last 22 years. It has been by relying upon the prophets that I was able to do this. And the thing that is really the driving point in all of this is that I finally figured out why there are no more prophets, and it's not just because there was not a single Yisraelite that was willing and able to do the job. They weren't needed anymore. Over the past 10 years, maybe 15 years, I have routinely attempted to use what I have learned to predict what was going to happen. And virtually never wrong. And I've made hundreds, maybe thousands of predictions the way things were going to play out. One of the predictions that I made was that the United States was going to be a Trojan horse, that all of this, we're with you, Israel, was like the Greeks offering the gift of the Trojan horse to Troy. And the reason that you're able to predict these things is because Yahweh's prophecy paints such a comprehensive picture of what is going to happen. And man has been so consistently bad over the years that it's really easy to see how the pieces are going to fit together. Now, one of the things I have always been a bit cautious of talking about is how the United States, of all nations, is going to be the great betrayer of Israel in the presentation in Yeshaya 17 and 18.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's exactly what Yah says. It's some 30 different descriptive references that describe only one nation, the United States of America. And God is really disgusted with what this nation has done and is doing. And Yahweh doesn't speak of nations, no matter how bad they are, if they're not negatively or positively influencing his people.
Mm-hmm.
So this means it had to be that the United States was the most egregious actor in the world relative to the security of Israel.
That's terrible.
Now, that's hard to explain when the United States is the only country voting in favor of Israel at the United Nations and is supplying Israel with some manner of military support, and where the American people are about 70% in favor of Israel, which is higher than probably most any other nation on earth. So how in the world does the United States fall to such a point that we are considered to be by one who knows a lot about such things, Yahweh, the most menacing country to Israel? And we're witnessing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I shared a month or so ago that the United States was scheming on the notion of either abstaining from the UN Security Council vote or actually proposing that a state of fakistan be declared, and that not negotiate with Israel, thrown down Israel's throat in a direct reward of terrorism, far worse than what Neville Chamberlain did to start World War II, because at the time, Hitler had not acted on his threats. He had written Mein Kampf, but had not proceeded to engage to pull it off. In this case, the Muslims that they would be rewarding with the state have acted over and over again to both lie and to kill and maim and terrorize Jews. But that was a pretty strong hint. But I don't think I've ever witnessed anything so blatant by any country. I'm in my 60s. I have never seen anything by any country as blatant as what the United States is doing now to Israel, where the Biden administration, both Biden himself, his pet Jew, Schumer, fellow progressive, and the vice president, too stupid to even be named, are all saying, oh, yeah, we have the backs of Israel. Israel has the right to exist. Our beef is with the Israeli government. The real problem here isn't Hamas, it's Netanyahu. We think Israel needs to have elections now and replace Netanyahu. Netanyahu is the problem. Now, for years, the United States, through its CIA and through the State Department, overturned the governments of nations around the world.
Yeah.
We assassinated leaders that didn't capitulate mm-hmm. to what we wanted. And if we didn't assassinate them, then we gave guns and money to the opposing side. Why do you think we're in the mess in the Ukraine? It's exactly what America did in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done it all around the world. You know, we didn't like Saddam Hussein, even though he was the most anti-fundamentalist Islamic terrorist dictator in the Islamic world. And so what did we replace him with? We went in there, we killed him. Replaced him with a government that is run out of Tehran, that is a Shiite theocracy. Nicely done. We didn't like Muammar Gaddafi, so we killed him. What did we get? A government by Islamic terrorists. This is what we do. We didn't like the government of Vietnam, so we replaced them. We made certain that he was killed. It's what we do. And you need to know, America, that America is scheming to do the same thing in Israel, but this time, unlike any other time, because Jews are held to a different standard, you know. The United States is vocally condemning the only democratically elected government in the entire region.
Isn't that amazing?
What gives us the right to do so?
Yep.
Talk about belligerent. And this isn't a Lithuania. Excuse me, Lithuania. It's not Monaco. This isn't Switzerland. This is Israel.
Yep.
This is the one bastion of hope in a sea that is plagued with Islam. This is God's people and God's country. And we're spitting in his face. Do you know what happens to nations that do this to Israel and Jews?
They're destroyed.
They're destroyed. Absolutely. And I have said for a long time that I should start with Netanyahu. For many years, I was a Netanyahu fan because Netanyahu is one of the few leaders in the world who would actually stand up to the truth. Occasionally, he would give a speech and say there's no such thing as a fakestinian. It's all a marketing myth. And he gave that speech to the United Nations. You know, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
And before the U.S. Congress. Good for him. Right thing to do. And he has never backed down from a fight with Islam when Islam was threatening the existence of Israel. And he is the only person now who is saying, no, we're not going to capitulate. Now, to his shame, when asked to take responsibility, he should have come out immediately and said, the greatest mistake I've made in my life led to this event. For one IDF soldier, Shalat, I released over 1,000 Muslim prisoners. Many of them are the leaders now of Hamas. And that mistake led to this day. So I am responsible. And I will fall on my sword. It is my job now to make certain that Israel is not destroyed. But the day this war is over, I will resign. And we will have the next round of elections. But I'm going to see it through because this is going to be a tough battle.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't do that, unfortunately. And Gantt looks distinguishing. He's a big, tall, handsome guy. Was head of the defense secretary for Israel that since ran the IDF. And so you'd say, all right, you know, there's a man, but he's a stuffed shirt. He's not intellectually bright, not particularly articulate. And he's got no cojones. When the United States came out and started lambasting Israel, rather than licking his chops and say, hey, man, I'm first in line. Netanyahu, and I'll be, for the first time, have the job I've always craved. I'll be prime minister of Israel, which is the Gallant we've come to know, or the Gantt we've come to know. Instead of that, what he should have said is, I'm disgusted by what the United States has said, by the Biden administration. I know that 80% of Americans support what we're doing, but to have this administration seek regime change in the only democratically elected government in the Middle East is revolting.
Yeah.
It is absolutely appalling for them to make such an announcement. And I want to tell you, I will not be any part of it. And I will also tell you that when it comes to the defense of Israel, Netanyahu and I may have our differences, but not on this. I stand shoulder to shoulder. I would make no decision that is any different than he has made. And I think I can speak for Gallant when I make that statement. And even the most liberal, who doesn't have a chance of being elected, Lapid, would say the same thing. Every Israeli of any responsibility is going to do exactly as we have done. So for the United States to say, oh, we're for Israel, we're just against the government, that's a pitiful lie. And I'm just disgusted by my country. But now we know the answer. Now we know why Yahweh had Yashaya detail an expose against the United States of America in the last days for what it does against Israel. This is where we are. And so that's the first thing I wanted to bring to your attention. I have a few other items in the news. It was an interesting speech. Brigadier General Dan Gulfus, I don't know how many of you saw that, but he, in front of a bunch of tanks and other things, had some microphones. It looks like Channel 13 was the principal provider, and with a gun strapped on his side and his full army fatigues, he told the politicians of Israel, you better be worthy of us. And, you know, as a soldier defending his soldiers for what they have endured, good for him. As a man who is in a democratic, freely elected nation where the military reports to the government, shame on him. This is not what we do. And if you're going to make remarks like that, then make them meaningful. Mm-hmm. Don't just talk about unity. And his deal was, you know, before the war, we were at each other's throats over judicial reform. That problem's not going away if they don't pursue judicial reform. Israel doesn't have a constitution. The Supreme Court in Israel, the High Court, is more powerful than any elected official, and it's almost resolutely progressive. They have no checks and balances. Israel can't survive that way. Israel either has to have a Bill of Rights or a constitution, or it has to limit the power of their Supreme Court, and they have to come up with a way that elected officials choose who participates on that panel. That's just a fact. And to say, we can't beat each other's throat, we have to be unified, so there's no more of that, then what's the answer? You know, they say that the IDF heads are exceedingly progressive. That may be true. Maybe that's why Israel got ransacked and surprised by the Muslims, because even though progressives still have decent IQs, they can't think. Maybe this is the problem. It's true. Yeah. Progressives can't think. It's just a statement of fact. They spew out unfounded opinions, and that's all they've got. They are more religious than the most zealot of fundamentalist religions. And almost everything they stand for is wrong. So anyway, I wanted to bring him to your attention because it was an interesting statement that he had to make. Next thing was interesting is that right after 10-7, in fact, it was the 10-8, Qatar went to the United States because Qatar has a interesting relationship with the United States because our fleet is there. And the reason that the U.S. fleet is at Qatar is because we built the base in Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia decided it didn't want us anymore. So after spending $5 billion, we had to move. And so we're in Qatar. And Qatar said, you know, this thing with Hamas is really not working out very well for us. We just as soon exile them. United States said, nope. Not going to do that. Keep them right there. Because there we have access to them and can negotiate with them. So if you want to know why Hamas is protected in Qatar, these mass murderers of Jews who are being bribed by tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of American and European United Nations money, it's because of the Biden administration. This is Bilkin. On the positive side, a survey was taken this past week in Israel, And Israelis now have almost no faith in their government. Only 23% of Jews in Israel trust the government. And only about 20% of religious Jews trust the rabbis. Isn't that interesting? So that means that there's 20% of Jews that trust the government, and there's 20% that trust the rabbis. I don't know if that's collectively 40 or if they're double counting. But that means somewhere between 60 and 80% of Jews are now at least potentially open to Yahweh and the message of Yada Yahweh.
Yeah.
I say that because until a person, and this would include Yehudim, there aren't two paths to God but one. Until a Yisraelite or Yehudim does what Abraham and Moshe did, which is to walk away from religion and politics, they are not welcome in the covenant. There's no way to approach God, no way to even know God, no way to engage in a relationship with God. There's no means of salvation. So with 80% of Israelis no longer trusting their government, then at least with those who are not religious among that remaining 80%, there's hope. This is exactly what had to happen for Yada Yahweh to resonate in Israel.
Yes.
There is a weeping and gnashing of teeth around the world about poor starving Gazians. And I've said before, I really don't care. The Gazians were overwhelmingly supportive of Hamas. They're fundamentalist Muslims. They celebrated the rape and murder of Jews. They celebrated the abductees from Israel. Heck, the United Nations was part of the plot and actually participated there. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, lined the streets celebrating the terrorists and shouting death to Jews. The women there are incubators for future terrorists. The children are vipers in waiting. And all of the 15,000+ jihadist Islamic terrorists that have been killed are no more civilians than the man on the moon. So of the maybe 5,000 to 10,000 others in Gaza that have been killed, I just have no sympathy. The opposite of the rest of the world. Do not care. You did this to yourselves. And, you know, you are the reason that Hamas is there. You're the reason that Hamas is still there. And so as the world gnashes its teeth and blames Israel for the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and doesn't want to condemn Islam or Hamas, but does want to condemn Israel, as I said last week, the fact of the matter is there's 50% more food being given freely to the Gazian Muslims than before the war. Now, you can't starve on 50% more food. So what's the difference? Islam. Muslims.
Yeah. And
Muhammad was a plundering, conniving, murderous, terrorist thief. That's just who he was.
Yeah.
Everything about Islam, once it moved into the Islamic era in Yathrib, was about terrorism and thievery. Well, killing too. But there's nothing more to it. That's what's wrong. Yeah, they... Food trucks are mobbed. The Muslims there are savages as they attack them. They are not attacking them because they're hungry. They're attacking them because they're greedy. They're trying to steal the food so they can sell it. Stealing it to sell it. They don't care if people starve. The more they starve, the better. The better they look.
Price.
So it's not. It has nothing to do with hunger. It has all to do with the corrupt nature of Islam. not my opinion. That's just a fact. If you don't know the fact, shame on you. And so Israel's finally come out and says, wait a minute, had nothing to do with us. This is what Hamas is doing. You think that the people are hungry, and there are some that are hungry. It's because Hamas is stealing the food, jacking up the prices, and not allowing the people to eat. Nothing to it more than that. And, of course, the nations surrounding Israel that could easily have provided safe sanctuary for the Gazians, the Muslims, chose not to. They prefer Israel to be put in this situation where Hamas is hiding under the dresses of their women. So, no, it's not Israel's fault. It's Islam's fault. The United States has even committed to building a port and bringing ships and even thinking about putting boots on the ground to oversee the distribution of food. Oh, talk about stupid. And in Gaza now, the most powerful of the clans was the Dogmush clan. The head of the Dogmush clan was just executed by Hamas because Islam tolerates no rival. And even though they were both Muslims, the crime syndicate is run by Hamas. And you just look at the pictures of the bags of grain. They're all being carried by Hamas jihadists in plain clothes. Bilkin came out this week and said that protecting civilians must be job number one for Israel and Gaza. Bull! Killing Hamas is job number one. Israel didn't bring this war on itself. They weren't occupying Gaza. They did nothing to the Gazians. They came out and massacred Jews. The consequence of that is to go after them and kill them. The only reasonable response. And while Israel has gone to greater lengths to protect non-combatants than any other nation in the history of the world, somebody finally said, okay, it was great, the United States. The United States lost 2,000 servicemen in Pearl Harbor. You killed 3 million Japanese civilians. You killed 3 million Japanese civilians. And you want to
talk about hypocrisy.
Yeah, you want to lecture us.
Always.
You know, the Germans didn't kill a single American. And you firebombed their cities, roasting women and children alive, 50,000 a night. Congratulations, America. You had an Islamic jihadist coordinate some flights into to U.S. buildings, and what you decided to do was invade Iraq and Afghanistan that had nothing to do with this, and over 1 million civilians died. And you want to lecture Israel? 1 million civilians died. And your pursuit of someone who had nothing to do, two countries that had nothing to do with the 9/11. Since that time, particularly under the abomination, the United States started using drones to kill anybody that the president wanted dead.
Isn't that amazing?
We killed over 30,000 civilians, none of whom had killed Americans. We just killed them. President says, yeah, that one, you go ahead and kill them. I don't care how many other people are taken out. Don't care there was never any trial. No care that wasn't any evidence. Heck with due process. We're killers. And we want to lecture Israel? It's preposterous what's happened to this country and to idiots like Bilkin and Biden and she who shall not be named because she is not worth it. Netanyahu made a speech to IPAC and said, the United States and the world cannot say that you support Israel's goal of wiping out Hamas and then oppose Israel when it takes the action necessary to achieve that goal. Now, as I said on the evening of October 7th, there is no way to wipe out Hamas. It's impossible. And so while I will defend Israel's right to try, it cannot be done. And it can't be done because Hamas is a symptom of Islam, and there aren't enough bullets and bombs in the world to take out 2 billion Muslims. The only solution to Islam is one that can no longer be deployed, because after the United States invasions of Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan, Muslims have now infested Europe and the United States, and so the plague has spread. It is contagious, and it can no longer be quarantined. But that was the only answer. Right after 9/11, Islam had to be quarantined. And otherwise, it will infect and kill everything it touches. It is a death cult. It has always been a death cult. It is impossible to coexist with Islam. Impossible. And to say otherwise is to be stupid. It's to not know what the Quran says or what Muslims believe or what Allah demanded or who Muhammad actually was. It's just pure ignorance to take any other view. And so that's those things can no longer be resolved, but Israel is wrong on this regard. I had our closest friend on the island that we live, I just found out today that she's Jewish. We had a hint that she was Jewish based on some of her ancestors and had treated her as such for a while, but she found out she was today, and I welcomed her to the family. And I said, being Jewish is the only ethnicity that actually matters. Otherwise, the tone of our skin is irrelevant. The character that matters, not our skin tint or our ethnicity, unless that ethnicity is Jewish, in which case there should be a sense of honor. Jews represent 0.2% of the world's population. They're responsible for 40% of the world's most important advancements.
Wow.
Israel is the, are the prophets, Israelites, the prophets of God. But it's also a responsibility. And so Netanyahu is wrong about bellyaching that no one is held to the same standard that Jews are held. Well, that part's true. But he thinks it's wrong. I think it's right. I think Jews should be held to a different standard. They're God's people. That was the whole intent all along, was to hold them to a different standard. And when they wake up and understand who God is, then they'll understand why they've been called to hold up a different standard. On its overall attack on Netanyahu, at the same time that the comatose Biden administration announced that Netanyahu was the real problem. They need to have elections. We need regime change in Israel. Then the U.S. intelligence report, of course, it's not signed. And, of course, it's nothing but a political hack job against Israel, came out and says, Netanyahu's survival as prime minister is in danger. I don't think that was coordinated. What is wrong with journalists today? This was in the Jerusalem Post breaking news, and the progressives at the Jerusalem Post aren't smart enough to say, well, wasn't that convenient? Now, every prime minister in a parliamentary system is always in danger. The whole nature of parliamentary systems are, gobbledygook politics. And, he's at the head of a coalition that has Haredim, for God's sake. Well, not for God's sake. God hates me. And so...
Forsaken.
Yeah. So, of course, he's in a... 80% of Israelis want the Haredim to have to serve in the IDF. Now, can you imagine? I mean, those spindly arms useless idiots that don't know anything, don't even study math. They speak Yiddish, so they're not even conversant in either English or Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to use the internet. They barely know how to use a cell phone. They don't read newspapers. They're not current on any world events. They can't be around a woman or they go berserk. And the IDF is as co-ed as any institution in the world.
True.
They're opposed to fighting. They're good at spitting, but they don't fight. What good are they? I mean, it's like a parasite. They're a parasite on Israel. They'd be a parasite on the IDF. I think that the government paying them to study their Torah is an absolute disgrace because their Torah is not Yahweh's Torah. It's their Torah.
Right.
But this is one of the most amazingly stupid things I think I've ever seen in Israel. But the head, I think he's the Sephardic rabbi. He's the guy that dresses in his really fancy gold brocade and blue robe with a fancy hat. Oh yeah, yeah. He is one ugly son of a bitch. And he got up and said that oh, I just hate this man. Given the opportunity, I will fry his butt. You can be sure. As a matter of fact, since there are some perks of this job, I can assure you that Bilkin and Biden have bought their ticket to Sheol. And so has this fellow. He says that the ultra-Orthodox will leave Israel if forced into the army.
Okay,
well, they won't. They can't earn a living. No one wants them.
Yeah.
There's no asylum for I'm a coward. There's no asylum
right.
for I won't defend my country. And there's no asylum for parasites. Well, I guess there are. Look at the Muslims in Europe. But no, they're being paid to do nothing but procreate so they have more political power. And he says that the only reason the IDF is winning is because of their relationship with the Almighty and their Torah study. And if they weren't studying their Torah, which is the Talmud, and weren't buddy-buddy with Hashem, the IDF would be losing. So 80% of Israel just went nuts. Pin this a-hole's ears back to the wall. But he's a parasite on the state. The state pays him. Netanyahu was the only politician of any ilk that didn't say, yeah, that's a piece of shit. Yeah, he ought not say that. I'm going to fire him since he's the ward of the state, and we're going to stop enriching yeshiva students. That was the last straw. But he can't do that because then his coalition crumbles. But that's how far Israel has fallen. Next article, this is just sharpening the criticism. Biden says Netanyahu is hurting Israel more than helping Israel. What a piece of trash. Next article, of course, Palestinians prepare for Ramadan as Gaza teeters on brink of famine, getting 50% more food given to them than before the war where they lived better than Jews in Tel Aviv. Erdogan says that Turkey firmly backs the terror group Hamas, and they compare Netanyahu to Hitler. Islam does strange things to men's minds, corrodes them way to the point that they can't think. She, whose name should not be mentioned because she is not worthy, says don't conflate Jews with the Israeli government. We're going to separate the Israeli government from Jews because, well, Jews have a right to survive, every bit as right to survive as the Palestinians. They both have an equal right to survive. And so it's the Israeli government that's causing the problem, not Islam, not Hamas.
Sick.
UNRWA, the United Nations agencies that actually had terrorists that raped and robbed and kidnapped and murdered Jews on October 7th. Not just 10,000 of them that blew up their social media accounts celebrating the death and mutilation and rape of Jews, but a score of them that actually participated. Umrah says, oh, that's not fair to us because some agency employees admitted Hamas ties only under Israeli coercion. It's the Jews' fault, not ours. There's pictures of them doing this. Their cell phones, they're texting back home. I am a sex slave. My buddy, yeah, who's also a Umrah teacher, just killed a Jew. Boy, that was fun. We robbed the home. I'm coming home with a pocket full of shekels. Oh, but no. They admitted that they had ties under coercion. What the hell is wrong with us? And yet, nobody amongst the Israeli media, the world media, has the chutzpah to say, no, that's ridiculous. Here's the truth. A report out of Switzerland that says anti-Semitism in Switzerland has tripled since Hamas invaded Israel, but even then, the Times of Israel doesn't word it that way, has tripled since the Hamas-Israel conflict. It's like the Jewish-Arab wars. What's wrong with people? Muslims attacked Israel. Israel sought to defend itself. They're not equal. Hamas attacked Israel. Israel is defending itself, fighting for its survival. There's not a Hamas-Israel conflict. There's something seriously wrong with Islam. Biden is drawing this red line in the sand that says if Israel enters Rafah to weed out Hamas to release its captives, that's a red line and that the United States will withhold its supply of weapons, which, by the way, only exists for one reason. You know why the United States has to give weapons to Israel and why renouncing them at any reason would be a grotesque breach of the United States commitment? You know why that happens? Why does Israel get $3 billion worth of United States weapons each year? You know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Political power, mostly. They bribe people.
For one reason and one reason alone. Israel controlled the Sinai. And the United States wanted Israel to give it back to Egypt because it wanted to woo Egypt into buying American weapons rather than Russian weapons. And if the United States could force Israel to surrender the Sinai, which it controlled and was about to control Cairo, and would have controlled Cairo at the end of the Six Days War, that to bribe Israel to give up the Sinai, the United States promised $3 billion worth of weapons aid forever. Now, if Israel continued to control the Sinai, there would be no Gaza. There would be no Muslims in the so-called West Bank. Have plenty of places to put them. So for the United States to renege on that or threaten to renege on it is disgusting. The Jordanian queen, oh boy, this one must have the IQ of a gnat. She's probably in there with the same level of IQ as the Gazians at about 67, which is sub-retarded. She said, humanitarian crisis in Gaza is deliberate. Now, it is deliberate.
Yeah, by who?
But it's by Hamas, not by Israel. Talk about stupid. Even Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Zbigniew Brzezinski was an exceedingly evil man. Zbigniew Brzezinski was the fellow that decided that if the United States rented the Taliban from Pakistan and bribed the Pakistani government with all manner of weapons, that the Pakistani government would be able to impose a dictatorship over its people, and it would be an Islamic dictatorship, even complete their atomic weapons development. And the United States, by paying them to rent the Taliban, would give the Taliban all manner of weapons, and that they would fight a proxy war against the Russians in Afghanistan because we were upset with what the Russians did on behalf of the Viet Cong and Vietnam to provide weapons to make it difficult for the United States to invade and occupy South Vietnam. So he decided that that would be the right answer. Let's go tit for tat and let's go arm the Taliban by ensuring we have a dictatorship in Pakistan and they finish their nuclear weapons. And we'll give all manner of Stinger missiles and other kind of anti-aircraft and anti-tank weapons to this religious fundamentalist group, and they'll go and bludgeon Russians by downing their helicopters, warplanes, and tanks. And as a result, we end up with 9/11 because the fundamentalist Muslims were crazy enough with American weapons to bludgeon the Russians so that they left Afghanistan. And once they whooped the Russians out of Afghanistan, they then volunteered to kick Saddam Hussein, who they looked at as a non-Muslim, out of Kuwait and to preclude him from entering Saudi Arabia. But then the Bush administration said, no, 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 we want that job. That is our job. We want to control our relationship with Saudi Arabia and the oil. So we sacrificed American lives, blood, and coin and killed 1 million people in the process, bringing on the wrath of a fundamentalist Muslim from Saudi Arabia, bin Laden, and suffered 9/11 as the consequence. Well, that man, Zbigniew Brzezinski, came up with that harebrained plan that ended in 9/11, said that the worst thing that could possibly happen to the free world is to push Iran, Russia, and China into a defense alliance or an economic alliance. Well, what do you think we did when we started this war in the Ukraine and then sanctioned Russia?
Exactly.
We assured that there would be an Iran, Russia, and China alliance. What do you think happened when we invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran? What do you think happened when we sanctioned Iran? What do you think happened when the United States started aiming all of its anti-world rhetoric and the Obama administration? We're going to refocus our military, and rather than going after Muslims in the Middle East, we're going to go after the Chinese. Put them all together. So Iran, Russia, and China are now holding naval drills in the Indian Ocean. Isn't that swell? All while the Houthis roared and kidnapped captains and sink ships with Iranian weapons. And Hezbollah is armed to the teeth with Iranian rockets. And the reason there's been no discussion of the Iranian bomb, it's done. It's done. Congratulations, America. And oh, by the way, guess who built those tunnels in Gaza?
Iranian.
The Russians.
Iranian.
And the Chinese. Nicely done, America. Oh, they were funded. The weapons were provided by the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the Chinese and the Russians that had the wherewithal to do that. Well, that's probably enough news for today. I'm sick of it. I don't know if you are, but nonetheless, there's so much happening around the world, and I just wanted to bring to your attention just how messed up the world is. Oh, there is one other item in the news, and I don't want to miss this, because I have predicted this now for the last 20 years. I've said that the U.S. economy is going to collapse when we lose our reserve currency status, which is going to happen, and that's the whole reason why the United States is trying to force the Netanyahu government out, because the United States wants to establish a Palestinian terrorist state. They know that Israel will be destroyed, but that's 3 or 4 years down the road. The the United States is going to be destroyed if the United States doesn't capitulate to the demands of the Saudi Arabians, and the Saudi Arabians want the Fakistanians to have a state, not because they like the Fakistanians, they can't stand them. They've exported all Fakistanians out of Saudi Arabia. They've all been expelled out of Kuwait. They don't fund them anymore. They're disgusted by them. But they want a threat to Israel, and the best way to threaten Israel is to have a Fakistanian state. And so to maintain petrodollar status and Federal Reserve status for the U.S. currency, the United States is being blackmailed by Saudi Arabia into establishing a Fakistanian state. Now, I've said that was going to be the primary catalyst, and it is, for destroying the U.S. economy. It's going to collapse. But there is another thing. You know how in 2008 we had the loan crisis, which was for two reasons. One is the Clinton administration legalized bundling loans and selling loans as derivatives. And so billions of dollars of loans were bundled and sold as these derivatives, and they had no value. And the reason they had no value is because for years the U.S. had come up with this illusion. If you want to believe in the economy and have people believe in fiat currency, which is actually a debt instrument, the best way to do them is to have them buy into that economy, and the way to really get their attention is with a home loan. And so they allowed people to buy a home with negative 5% cash down.
Yeah.
Rather than putting 20% down, which has always had been the minimum, you could get a loan for 105% of the assessed value of the home, so that you'd have, you know, money to make your first payments, and then they were all based on adjustable rates. So when the United States went into this mode of quantitative easing and creating the illusion of selling our treasury bills, and thereby inflating the currency so the currency had less and less value, the only way you can resolve that is to charge higher and higher interest rates. Interest rates began to go up. The people who had these homes couldn't pay them. The loans were all non-recourse. The easiest thing for them to do was welch on the loans. As that started, that was an avalanche, and with the avalanche, prices fell further, and then none of the loans had any value. That's just what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I mention it because there is another economic bubble, and this time it is office buildings. In places like New York, there are entire skyscrapers that have zero occupancy. The people were moving out of them. Then when COVID happened and we had politicians mismanage the economy and become dictators and say, you know, businesses can't have any more than X number of employees show up for work, and they have to do work for home, where politicians decided they were better at deciding who could work and who could not, and controlling people's lives and deciding what was an essential business, what was not an essential business. They screwed everything up. The world will never recover from what they did. But one of the things they did was cause people not to show up at offices anymore. They work from home. They're not nearly as efficient working from home. But because they work from home, guess what? Nobody in those offices, which means those offices aren't generating any revenue, which means the non-recourse loans on those offices are worthless. We're going to have a collapse that is due to not only office space, but also retail space, because those big mega malls and all of the strip malls, they don't have any value either. And hotels and central cities, they don't have any value either, because no one's going to conventions and because they're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a collapse of commercial real estate. All right, so that's my my news for today. And by the way, it's all good news. How could you have all of that terrible news and you say, it's really good news? The same reason I said that Israelis not trusting their government is good news.
Right.
10 years till Yahweh's return. less than 10 years. And over that time, we're expecting that 7,000 people will be ready by 2029 for the Teruah harvest, and some 70 or 77,000 people will be ready in Jerusalem, mostly Yehudim and Israelites, in 2033 for Yom Kippurim when Yahweh and Dod return. For that to occur, people not only have to stop trusting in government and religion, but they must be desperate for hope, so desperate that they turn to the creator of the universe. And the only presentation that actually presents who he is by name, what he is offering, exactly what he is expecting in return, and how to engage in a relationship with him, is the Yad Yah series.
Right.
That's it. So we have been deployed to convey this message to God's people so that the Teruah harvest and Yom Kippurim are grand celebrations of family reunions. And the only way that enough Yehudim are going to pay attention is for more things like COVID and that disruption, like 10-7 in Israel and that disruption, and then things that are happening around the world with 300 and 400% rise in anti-Semitism. And I'm going to just share something with progressive Jews worldwide. They may not like Israel. They may want Israel to fail. But you know, prior to the 1920s, 1930s, and then going through the 1940s, there were relatively few prosperous Jews around the world. There are some in America, a few in Europe. But for the most part, it was very difficult for Jews to prosper. The vast majority of Jews were living in shtetls and were deprived either by the Roman Catholic Church or by socialists or by fascists or by Muslims.
Right.
What changed was Israel. And when Israel became a nation and there was somebody advocating for Jews, when Jews had a safe haven, it became possible for Jews to flourish around the world. And now they are the most affluent ethnicity in the world. All because Israel exists. They're not careful if Israel were to fail. They'd be right back to the conditions of 1930s Europe and the Holocaust.
Yeah, the world would not view them kindly just because they were anti-Israel.
That is correct. Yes. Well, look at almost all of the hostages, not all the IDF hostages, I would exclude them, but all of the non-IDF hostages, the kids at the rave and those in the kibbutz, were almost exclusively progressives. And look how Muslims treated them. All right, we were dealing with the saddest episode in Ed Dode's life, and I'm going to share the speech that Joab gave for him. And while I admire Ahab for saying it and Joab for saying it, and I think that Joab is right, and I think that Dode was entirely wrong in this particular case, I can guarantee you that I would never have the courage of Joab. I think I'm a pretty judgmental guy and got some courage, but I ain't walking in there and telling God's chosen king, his son, the Messiah, you are really bungling it. That I'm looking forward to Joab being in eternity, because everybody needs a kick in the tush from now and again, and that dude is capable of delivering it. So, as I say, I'll go after anybody, including myself. But God's son, I'm not so sure I've got that level of courage. Then Joab, Yah is the father, arrived at the home of the king, and he declared, "You have become emaciated. You're withering away. You're confused and disappointing. This day in the presence of your co-workers, all of whom would have saved your life, and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, even the lives of your concubines. Because you love those you should hate, and you hate those you should love. I don't think I have ever heard anyone deliver a message based upon what Yoab said.
No.
But think of the power of those words. You're a disgrace. You are disappointing. You are an emaciated, withering man who is a shadow of his former self. Because you love those you should hate, and you hate those you should love. I've long said, and I will continue to say, hate is a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Yoab knows it. Yahweh knows it. We must know what to hate, how to hate, when to hate, why to hate, and most especially how to hate. It's essential. I had one of the most bitter blows I have experienced in a while. I'm over it now. You move on in life. I think I shared with you that I had a young man that I had actually five or six young men at this island, all in their early 20s, that had never worked at a normal job before, that I mentored, defended, got them out of jail, taught them a trade, shared, they were family in my home. We shared meals together, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of my life invested in these young men. The one that was closest to me, his name was Elvis. And this young man I bought a truck for, hired the best attorney in the world to keep him from serving 30 years behind prison, which would have been the minimum sentence. I got his best friend out of jail, hired his best friend, wrote the judge to get him released from house arrest so that I had the chance to mentor the both of them. Well, this young man stopped showing up one day in November. Towards the end, his car broke down. I gave him my truck for like 3 months. I never drove my own car. He drove it. He didn't even have a license, so think of the risk that I was putting myself through. Hmm. And I noticed that his mind was no longer on the job. His attitude shifted, but I said, everybody goes through this. I even put him up in one of our closest friends' condos, so he had a two-bedroom condo with an ocean view to get him out of the project.
Nice.
Did everything that you could imagine for this young man. Won the case. With the judge based on the affidavits that I had written and the attorney that I had hired for him. There was $23,000 worth of credit card fraud perpetrated against me. Citibank will hold me harmless, likely on the most of it, but I'm not sure they'll hold me harmless on all of it. Not my fault, but nonetheless, this is what happened. And it was all local merchants, so I knew the merchants had to be complicit. And so I filed a police report. I do want to prosecute charges. And this last week, I was asked to come down to the police station, meet with the detective who had a video. They wanted to show me of the person that was knew was fraudulently using my credit card. Card not present. They took a picture of my card and used the numbers. It was Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
This man I had done so much for. I was devastated. I cried right there in the office. I'm not a very emotional guy. Mm-hmm. I cried. In front of the police. It was devastating.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I came back home, and one of the gentlemen that is a very close friend of mine on the island, he's an artist. He's doing some projects here in the house. We call it Gilding the Lily. And he says, now that you know that, I have something you're not going to want to hear. But I need to tell you this. This is now back in November. He said, another man that you had working here, was driving Elvis back and forth before you gave him your car and went into the apartment that you had made available for him from your friend and took a picture of a kilo of cocaine and a machine gun, a full-function machine gun, sitting next to it on the kitchen counter.
Very good.
And he didn't tell me.
He should have told you.
And the same day, of course he should have, on the same day, this Elvis confessed to this other individual that worked for me that he had killed a man. And the man he had killed was the man that was threatening him. He had a hit out on his life. He happened to be a Colombian drug lord. He and a number of his friends went out and murdered him. And when my friend questioned him, I said, you know, how could you do that? You know, that's a pretty immoral thing to do. And he said, well, you know, that's the way we do things around here. He was threatening me, so we took him out. And I have sleep just fine over it. He didn't tell me until, well, 3 months later, almost 4 months later. And I said, listen, we're friends. I'm not going to hold this against you, but I want you to know how horrible a thing you did.
Yeah.
By not telling me. My family was subjected to a murderer and a thief. And you said nothing. He said, but I know you like the kid. I know that, you know, you wouldn't want to hear it. So you cowered. He said, well, I didn't want to get involved. You know, I what happens if I have to testify and he comes after me? I said, what is wrong with you? Where's your character? Where's your morality? Where's your backbone? I thought you were a man. Back in my day, you expected men to stand up to things like this. You know, today, I would say that it's equal responsibility for women to stand up in the same way, too. A man is just stronger, and they have a little better way to defend themselves. But nonetheless,
for sure.
I said, what's wrong with you? You know, first of all, to know that somebody committed a crime and not say something is a crime.
Yes.
But second of all, look what you did to us because you were a coward. Now, I was exceedingly disappointed. We kept on talking it through and he kept on having excuses and he kept on saying, no, there are no excuses for this. What you did was wrong. You didn't have the courage to stand up and to say what needed to be said. Now, I'm sure, yeah. And my wife, she went in and talked to him because, listen, we're still great friends. I care deeply about this individual, and I am going to overlook what he did. I'm just saying this, and I didn't mention his name. I'm just saying this just as an example to compare to Yoav. Yoav knew that there were times to hate. The moment I saw that man, a young man, buying gaudy gold chains that he actually wore in my presence with my credit card, I knew that the person I thought I was helping didn't actually exist. And so while I may want to have carried on and pretended like I had some affection for this person that actually didn't exist, now I knew that the real person was a creep, a murderer, the drug lord.
Yeah.
And so just instantly, I went from like to extreme dislike.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly. And this is Yoav. Yoav had the courage, he had the character to do what Moshe had done long ago when he saw the Egyptians beating a Hebrew. He risked his life to intervene. This is what the world needs. This is what we're doing when we expose and condemn Islam and tell you the truth about it. This is what the world needs. This is what we accomplish when we stand up on behalf of Israel and against Islam and progressives, even the United States. This is what the world needs. It needs people who are judgmental, who have morals, who will throw their morals all over the room. The right thing to do. Joab did the right thing. He said, you love those you should hate. We ought to hate the religion of Islam and everyone who is a good Muslim because they're deadly.
Yes.
And this is a toxin without a cure. No way to resolve this toxin. It has to be quarantined. And then the religion itself has to be exterminated. Yahweh's going to do that. Dode's going to do that. But between now and then, just think of all the harm that has been done by coddling them and protecting them. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Joab was right. There aren't many Joabs in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would say, rather than there aren't many, there are none. I'm a pretty stand-up guy. I'm not in his league. It's just the fact is, he is the best I've ever seen. No, Moshe is the best I've ever seen at this.
Mm-hmm.
But Joab's darn good. Yeah, there's a lot of Yahweh's prophets. Yeshaya, who we're going to meet before too long. Yeshaya was a real stand-up guy, right in the face of the king, the queen, and all of the religious establishment. He said, you're going to die. You're anti-Yahweh. You're a shame. You're a disgrace. And you're going to die. And I'm going to embarrass you before you die. Yeah, that's pretty stand-up.
It's inspiring.
All right. So there have been some. Caleb. There's another one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Told everybody in Israel, what the hell is wrong with you? We've been brought all the way here. We've been freed from slavery. We've been offered this land. And you want to cower because, well, there's some communities in that land that scare you? And you don't want to go in? And now you want a bellyache? What the hell's wrong with you? Yeah, Caleb's a pretty stand-up guy. But the world needs to know that we need to hate not only rape and rapists and pedophiles and pedophilia and mass murder and mass murderers, but we ought to despise the religions and political schemes that encourage these things. And the world's been against Jews, and we should embrace them. The world has been against Yahweh, and we should love him. Instead, you have implied this day that you don't have leaders or co-workers. I realize that if Absalom had lived and all the rest of us had died this day, then it would not have been seen by you as pleasing. It would have been seen by you as pleasing and correct.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So right now, stand up. Go out and speak from the heart to your coworkers. Because I promise by Yahweh, if you do not go forth, if you remain obstinate and immobilized as an individual, if you cower, this night will be worse for you than all of the evil that has befallen you from your youth to now.
Wow.
Samuel, listen to God. 2 Samuel 19, 6 and 7. One of the greatest speeches ever. History of the world right there. I mean, the only one that gave better speeches really was Moshe. I love Dode's lyrics, but this is right to the heart.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand. Dode grieved for his son. And for the father to hold him accountable for what he had done. And just as our father stood up for us, Dode would take a stand on behalf of Absalom. Yes, he was guilty of sin, but so was everyone else. Chag, Matzah, and Kippurim were designed to redeem and reconcile. It is all true. Dode would have hated what Absalom had done. He would have loved him nonetheless as a son. And to do both, and there's only one way to do both, Dod would fulfill Chagmasah, carrying Epsilon's guilt and ours into Sheol and depositing it there. I wrote a paragraph in Goddamn Religion today where Allah had his militants who turned tail and ran at Uhud, and he's saying that they should beg for forgiveness. Now, I just stopped and said, you know, I've been with Yahweh now for 23 years. I've never asked him to forgive me, never once asked him to save me. I would never ask Yahweh to forgive me. There's nothing to forgive. Why is there nothing to forgive? Is it because I'm perfect? Why is there nothing to forgive? Why would it be foolish to ask Yahweh for forgiveness?
In his eyes, you're already perfect.
No, I'm not forgiven. No, I'm not forgiven. You're not forgiven.
I never saw it.
See, you're missing the whole point. There's nothing to forgive.
Yeah, I never saw it.
What did Dod do on Matzah? He took the guilt of every covenant member into Sheol and deposited there.
Right.
Whatever I've done that is less than desirable with Yah sits there. If it's there, 100% of anything I've done that I shouldn't have done, it's there. What do I have to forgive?
Nothing.
Nothing. So why should I ask for forgiveness? Forgiveness from what? It was brilliant what Yahweh's design and what Dod did. We have nothing to forgive. Why would I ask Yahweh to save me? Save me from what? So it's one of the real mistakes that people make, this whole salvation notion. There is no salvation. There is no forgiveness. You're either right with God and your guilt has been removed, so you're perfect in his eyes. You know, Yahweh loved Dod, and yet he did this dopey stuff. Why? Because whatever Dod did that was inappropriate was hauled off by him to Sheol, deposited there, right, never to be seen again. A marvelous solution.
Indeed.
So now from this view, we can see the perspective that was intended and be enriched by Yoab's affirmation that it's ungodly for any of us to love what we should hate or hate what we should love, and recognize just how prophetic of Dod's resolution he would be. So let's consider this next line of the Mizmor. This is the first line of Mizmor 3:1, and I'm sorry for getting so wound up before we even got to the Mizmor, but you can see there are things in my life that really trip my trigger, and Yoab's speech happens to be one of those things. It's like when we read what Moshe did in Egypt in Mitzrayim, and how the Jews turned on him and for saving a man's life that was being bludgeoned. Men of character, women of character, Deborah, for example, Sarah being a woman of character, men and women of character are so rare that when you have the opportunity to witness something that they have done, we should just all celebrate. It's a great, great life lesson.
Right.
Yahweh. Yeah. What is the extent and why the increasing number of my adversaries and troubles happens to be Sar? A great many rise up against me. Now, Sar is T-S-A-R, Tazdei, Rosh, is a exceptionally important concept for us at this moment in time. There is no tribulation, but there is a time of Jacob's troubles. Jacob is a synonym for Yisrael. So it is the time of Israel's troubles, Troubles is from Tsar. Mm-hmm. When you want to see Tsar in action, look at Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is the plural of Tsar with a mem in front of it to say, ponder the implications of adversarial, unfortunate situations where people are confined and narrowed in by her foes in a hostile opposition. It is a crucible of oppression. And so Tsar is the term that Yahweh used to talk about this last 10 years that Israel is enduring. It began on October 7th, 2023. It will end on October 7th, 2033. We have entered the time of Israel's troubles. It is Tsar. And it means adversarial, unfavorable. It means to be confined, to be narrowed. It means to be mistreated by foes who are in hostile opposition. Islam is Tsar of Israel and Jews. Progressives are Tsar of Israel and Jews. If the United Nations were to take a vote between Islam and Israel, the vote would be 175-1 with some 20 wow. nations abstaining. That's how bad it is. It is emblematic of Dode's situation circa 1000 BCE as it is symbolic of the opposition to Dode today. Yes, his son, Absalom, got way too big for his tunic, and he was up to no good. Sure, prior to this, Shaul was jealous of Dode and sought to kill him. But really, how bad could it have been since he married Shaul's daughter? And he was best friends with Shaul's son. Played music for Shaul. Had the opportunity to kill him and didn't. Well, both Shaul and Absalom beguiled many to their side. It would be a stretch to say that the vast majority of the people were mutinous. It's just not true. Moreover, Dode was beloved by Israelites for having the courage and ability to expose and condemn, then kill Goliath. He was so charismatic, he could sing the sandals off the onerous foe. Plus, he had the creator of the universe at his side, calling him my son. He was no match for anyone on earth. Therefore, this is using one life to foreshadow another. It speaks of a much greater foe, of another Shaul, of the one who would turn countless billions against everything Dode stood for and that he had accomplished. It addressed Dode's personal anguish when fulfilling Chag Matzah and the riotous conditions that he will suppress during the time of Jacob's troubles when he returns. This is the adversary behind the great majority, the established, the honored and exalted foe who will seek to relegate the kingdom of Dode to a bygone place and people. The preponderance of people are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him or through him with God. Pause and consider this. Oh, yeah? Well, that's, by the way, what Shaul, who became Paul, wrote in Galatians. He said, hey, yep. You know, none of these promises can pertain to Dode, whom he called David, because he's dead and buried. Mm-hmm. He's not returning. He's not going to solve anything. He can't be the Savior. He's dead. He's buried, what Paul wrote. He can't save you. It must be my mythical misnomer. Jesus Christus was your savior. I got news for you. Dodd is questioning this because at this point, he knows what he's going to do. And so he is saying, can you imagine that, God? The preponderance of people are saying of my soul, the soul that's going to return twice more, the soul that's going to save Israel, the soul that is going to save every covenant member, the only soul that is going to save anyone eternally, my soul, that it can't save anyone, even accompanied by God. Wrong doesn't get any more wrong than that. Because of Paul's massive contribution to the Christian New Testament, this is what most people would say today of the likes of Dodd, whom they would call David, and those who are like him who are Torah observant, that there is no salvation for him or through him. And they would be wrong, completely missing the point and the purpose of the Torah. The five terms and conditions of the covenant, coupled with the seven invitations to be called out and to be welcomed by God, facilitate the salvation of those, and I shouldn't even use that word, facilitate the approach of those into God's family who accept the first and answer the second. Yeah, when you really get down to it, and I don't think I want to rewrite the books over this, we're not being saved.
Yeah.
We're being perfected. Pesach exists to make us immortal. Matzah exists to perfect us. So if you're perfect, how can you be saved? And yet, what Dodd did is to yatzah us. And rather than the secondary definition of yasha, which means to deliver is the primary definition, Dodd actually delivered us, freed us, liberated us from our guilt. And that's a better definition of the word.
What's interesting to me is this is what he's saying that other people are saying about him. And it's
correct.
Really interesting to put that in the frame of your perspective, because this is like you're saying, it's wrong multiple ways what they're saying about Dodd.
Correct. And Dodd knows it. Yeah,
yeah.
They're said the preponderance of people are saying this, that there is no salvation, there's no Yeshua, there's no deliverance or liberation for him or through him with God. Pause, please, Salah, and think about this. It's what every Christian would say. It's what every Muslim would say. It's what every secularist would say. It's what every Israelite would say,
yep,
even today. In fact, the only people who are not saying that are those that have either written the Yada Yah series of books, edited the Yada Yah series of books, or have taken the time to read the Yada Yah series of books, and they know better.
Right.
But that's thousands amongst billions think otherwise. This is the litmus test. This is the fulcrum of life with God and the family, or our souls dissipating to nothingness. Dodd was the Passover lamb. Paul and Akiba were both one to deny. As a result of the religions they founded, most would claim that there is no liberation through what Dodd has accomplished, and they would be wrong. And it would cost 80 generations of Jews and Christians their souls. As we turn the page and embark upon the amazing discoveries which await us as we move through Dodd's songs, we'll find Yahweh specifically referring to Dodd as his anointed Messiah, as his chosen king, now and forever, as his right hand, as his rightful shepherd, even as our liberator. Through the lyrics and lives of this remarkably brilliant and articulate man of good judgment and exemplary character. Yahweh accomplishes all of these things. Dode will even admit as much in the next stanza of his song. He knew. And this is not, you know, Yahweh is exceedingly real. The Torah and prophets are raw. This is not like anything else where everything is whitewashed and God's all prissy and, you know, and people are holy and there's a religious righteousness. No. God spoke through and worked with people who were raw. All of them. And he actually likes the flavor that is a part of the communication of people who are passionate and they have backbone and they have scars, they have calluses, who have had experiences like I shared with you this week that this happened.
No.
That had those kind of experiences, that know what Dode knows about a broken family, because that's how we develop character. That's how we get an appreciation for what Yahweh has endured. And so when we read Dode doing a dunderhead thing, and we read Dode being brokenhearted over a broken family, it's because God chose to reveal this message through men who knew what it was like to have love and lost, just as he has, who have failed and got back up, who have taken the risk to do the right thing and have seen it through. So we ought not, that's why I said to Yoab here that I admire what he does. I don't think I don't have the horsepower to pull that off, not to Dode. And he did, so I admire him. I couldn't have done, I might not even been able to do what Moshe did. I think maybe I could have done what Moshe did in Mitzrayim. I would risk it all for that. But this is God's son. That's a whole different thing. But we need to understand why we hear these stories. Here, look at Abraham. I mean, pimped out Sarah twice for money. That's really terrible.
Very kidding.
I mean, really, really terrible. It's disgusting. And yet, Yahweh loved him. How? Because he knew what Dode was going to do and could retroactively apply it to Abraham, and he saw the good parts, and didn't have to overlook the bad because the bad were gone.
Yeah.
It's a marvelous plan that he came up with. You, Yahweh, are a shield all around me and my source of deliverance. My manifestation of power, my attribution of status, and the one raising my head first and foremost from the beginning. Ms. Moore, Psalm 3:3. So if we are looking to be protected, Yahweh was the one to do it. You know, I've received thousands and thousands of death threats, and I've never once ducked. When people say, aren't you afraid that this young man, if he killed somebody, is now that you're prosecuting him for credit card fraud, is going to attack you? No.
He's afraid of you.
See how close you can get. It might be entertaining. No. If you're doing something that Yahweh wants done, then he's your shield.
Right.
He's your source of deliverance. If you want to accomplish something worthwhile, he is the manifestation and attribution of status for everything of value. He's the one willing to raise our heads above the crowd. I've always said that, you know, if you're one of the rare people that is going to go against the crowd and you're going to raise your head against the crowd and say, you know, you're all going the wrong direction, and let me tell you why, you are going to be stampeded. You are going to be maligned. You know, the fastest way to develop enemies and to be slandered is to take a stand, put your head above the crowd. Doe did it. I think that's a lot of reason why Doe finally just wore out. It, particularly in Israel, that's a tough crowd. It just became too much in the end. And there are times where it's hard. Mm-hmm. And Doe finally wore out. Now he's going to be re-energized and it'll all be fine again. But here as he's inspiring this psalm, he's got the answer. The answer is all over the 91st psalm, that Yahweh is a shield around those and a source of deliverance, the manifestation of power and the status, the one who will raise our head not only above the crowd, but protect it once it's there. It was never realistic to believe that Dodd was actually concerned for his safety. He fought in 66 battles, never lost one. You know, for example, my relationship with Yah is wonderful, but barely in the same universe when compared to Dodd's. And yet I'm not bothered in the least with what others say. Don't care. When I preach the word of God, you can say whatever you want to say. I do not care. I'm going to continue to convey Yahweh's testimony, and I'm going to continue to condemn that was opposed to him and his people.
Right.
So I know something of this, having received countless death threats from Muslims for having the courage and the sense to reveal the truth about Muhammad, the Quran, and Allah, doing so publicly on 5,000 to 10,000 radio interviews, all under my own name, and yet I haven't lost so much as a minute's sleep over any of it. Not even a minute. And I'm far less important to God by comparison to his beloved and anointed king of Israel. But God takes care of those, take care of his people.
Sure.
Now, I share this because the insurrection that is perpetrated by Absalom was easily and quickly resolved by Dodd's forces. It was. It might have been the first day of the battle. And it was only the ensuing sacrifice to save his son's soul that would be cause for celebration and grief. So Dodd held greater status with Yah and probably all the rest of us combined. He would have had no reason to duck, causing us to realize that this reference to raising his head from the beginning, attributing great power and status to him, delivering him and delivering through him, speaks of something special, of something that will soon happen, something that has happened as well. Yahweh delivered Doe's nefesh from Sheol following the fulfillment of Matzah. Then during Bukurim, Dodd became Bakor, firstborn. His status was raised from king to liberator, following the footsteps of Moshe. He became the first and foremost among men. And speaking of unique, what follows has the invitation in Dodd's voice and the answer in God's rather than the other way around. I communicated audibly, calling out and summoning Yahweh. And he answered me from his set-apart mountain. Pause and consider this. I communicated audibly, calling out to and summoning Yahweh. And he answered me from his set-apart mountain. Now, it is our responsibility to listen to what Yahweh has to say. Even Dodd, with his relationship, with his brilliance, even though he had the ultimate gift of gab when it came to conveying Yah's testimony, even he knew that the right approach was to listen to God as opposed to yabber at him, that God is sending us the invitation that we should answer. And yet here in Mizmor 3:4, He's the one who is Kara. Kara was written in first person. Called imperfect. I communicated audibly, calling out to and summoning. And he answered me. When did he do that? On Matzah for Kippurim.
Mm-hmm.
He was the living embodiment at that point of Kara.
Mm-hmm.
He was the living embodiment of Yahweh's Anah answer. He had made this sacrifice on the set-apart mountain so that we could be Kodesh. That's what I consider is important when we pause to contemplate what he said. So Dode knew where to turn his ear to listen to God, but he also knew that there was a time to summon God. Further, his summons was answered because long before Dode called out to Yahweh on this day, he had listened to his Torah. He had engaged in the Bereth. He had attended the Mikre, and now he was fulfilling them. It is the proper order of things, and it brings the most beneficial results. Now, Jan, I chat. I'm sure you do as well. But I do 100 to 1, probably 1,000 to 1, listening to talking when it comes to God. It just works out better that way. I learn more. I don't embarrass myself. I'm enlightened. I learn. I'm energized. I'm empowered. I do something worthwhile with my life. The only time I talk is on this program. I mean, you understand, this program is really the opposite of the relationship I have with God. Now, to some degree, it's the same because we're reading Yah's testimony, and I'm sharing the insights that can be derived from it, and that's how Yah and I live our lives together. But, you know, in our normal existence, most of my responses are, wow, or thank you for sharing that, or I'm impressed. That was another good one. You're good at this prophecy stuff. We have kind of a father-son relationship, you know. He's the grown-up, I'm the kid. And, you know, it's nice to be the kid in this relationship.
Yep.
So it is the proper order of things that the most beneficial result, and as a result, father and son had rehearsed what they would accomplish together 1,000 years in advance of it occurring. And they knew that they could rely on one another. And that really is essential. Yahweh knew that in the end, when it came down to the most important moment of his life, he could rely on Dode. Dode was committed to making this happen. And, of course, Dode knew he could rely on Yahweh. You know, I think to some extent, we've been doing this now for 23 years. I think Yahweh knows he can rely on me. I'm not going away. I'm going to see it through.
Yes.
And I think it's comforting, even for God, to know that he can. Now, you know, I expect Yah to continue to make it as easy as he can. By easy, I mean we don't need a whole lot of distractions to get this done. So I'm not inviting distractions to say, okay, how many distractions can you handle before you're no longer eager to keep going ahead? But I can tell you that, you know, Yahweh has done a marvelous job of removing distractions, and I'm devoted to the cause, and I think he knows it. And I think he's good with it, and I completely trust him to do as he's promised. What Dode reveals next, however, did not occur during the fiasco with Absalom. And by the way, Absalom is Ab, father of Shalom, reconciliation. So father reconciles, So it's kind of an interesting name, and this being an additional motivation for Dode to fulfill matzah. Helping us to recognize this is likely much of the reason that we were provided so much detail on Dode's reaction to the end of the coup. By knowing what happened then, we're able to see this as addressing a much greater past and future event. This is the second and third coming when Dode came to liberate us and will return to lead us at the conclusion of the worst, the very, very worst of the time of Jacob's troubles in the summer of 2033. Revived and protected and productive, he will take action as a result of Yahweh sustaining and supporting him throughout the ages. And listen, Ian, when Dode came to fulfill Chag Matzah, he had spent 1,000 years with Yah. When he returns as the king of kings, our shepherd, the great leader, he will have spent 2,000 years with Yah. There, I share this because, you know, when Eliyah returns, he will have spent, 2,800 years with Yahweh. I have spent the last 23 years with Yahweh, but not in the spiritual realm, not not as a seven-dimensional being that can embrace so much of who Yah is. I mean, it's just what we can know in 3.5 dimensions versus what we can experience and know in 7 dimensions are very different things. And so, and our physical power to to produce, to perform, to be effective as a spiritual being is infinitely beyond what we can do as a mortal physical being. So when Dode returns as a a spiritual being that can take physical form when he so chooses, it's just like Eliyah. I mean, it's going to be so energized, and it's one of the reasons why I asked you. I said, you know, I'll do whatever you want to do this, but I'd really like to have that 6 months between the Teruah harvest and returning on Pesach in 2030 in Shamayim. If there'd be more help here, I'll stay here. But can you imagine how energizing that would be? So when Dode returns, we should expect a Dode as brilliant as the sun. At this point, we can only imagine what 15 minutes would be like in Yah's presence. I mean, if Yah were to walk up and you know, it's a spiritual realm, but you know, tangibly we think in the material realm, put his hand on our shoulder and look us in the eye and smile. You know what that would do to our confidence, our courage, our capacity to do the right thing? I mean, that's what Dode is going to have gone through. And by that time, he will have spent 3,000 years with Yahweh.
Right.
So revived and productive, he's going to take action as a result of Yahweh sustaining and supporting him throughout the ages. If not, what reason would Dode have for telling us in the midst of the third Mizmor Psalm that he did the same thing we all do almost every night? He fell asleep and he woke up refreshed and productive the next morning. Well, it was quite a night. I relaxed. I stretched out and reclined, laying down to rest, and I fell asleep. I slept. I will awaken, revived and productive, coots, passing through the summer and the heat of the moment. I am to be roused, feeling alive and refreshed, taking action and bearing fruit, because Yahweh sustains and supports me, upholds me, steadfastly focusing upon me such that I can lean on him for whatever is necessary. As the famous line from the movie says, I'm back. That is Dode is revealing. He fell asleep 3,000 years ago, but was awakened to serve his people 1,000 years later, and most especially during the fulfillment of Bukhuram. And 10 years from now, this vision of coming home in 2023, as I wrote it, we're going to witness the third coming. And I think that's exciting. And he is going to be sustained and supported by Yahweh. He is going to be awakened, revived, and productive. It's going to be extraordinary to see. The Dode that we witness and that we get to enjoy is going to be the best of what we see and hear in his words and lives, an infinite fold. And we are going to be infinitely greater than we are as well. That's a good place to start. We are within 2 minutes of Blog Tech Readiness telling us good night. So I thank you for listening. I'm sorry for taking so much time on the news, but we haven't spent a lot of time on the news here recently, and there's a lot going on with Israel, and we want God's people to know how important these events are. And please go to yadayah.com. All the books there are free. And then follow the link to Amazon, particularly if you live in Israel. And buy the first two volumes of Goddamn Religion. Buy the first six or seven volumes of Yada Yahweh. Buy the first two volumes of Coming Home. Please read them. I'm not going to make a dime on these things. I'm not telling you for any reason other than this is life and death. This is for your survival. This is to be part of God's family. Do it for yourself. Do it for those you love. Do it for the God of Israel. Do it for Dode, your king. I'm looking forward to meeting you there. May God bless you all. Have a wonderful Shabbat and good night.
Good night.
Night, guys.
Night, Dee. Yeah, good night, Dee.
This is the sound of your ride home with Dad after he caught you vaping. Awkward, isn't it? Most vapes contain seriously addictive levels of nicotine and disappointment. Know the real cost of vapes. Brought to you by the FDA.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.